to sort of see these companies as.
And you're listening to 90.7
FM
WGXC
Agra.
Moments before he's hit with a 40-foot wall of sulfuric acid that will horribly burn everything in its path. Now, that's real acid, so I want to see goggles, people.
My eyes, the goggles do nothing.
It's almost always safety first at the Thingularity Radio Program, so don't let that happen to you. Have your questions answered by sending them to CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com and tune in every first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM Agra or anytime at WGXC.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Dave King and Frank Tartaglione of Philmont, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Columbia County Sanctuary Movement is a nonprofit organization based in Columbia County that organizes alongside immigrants and allies to collectively support, empower, and defend our communities. CCSM offers programs that assist newly arrived individuals, including food programs, mutual aid funds, legal support services, and opportunities to organize and be an activist. You can find more information on social media at CCSMNY or by calling 518-303-3848.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, November 5th. Local early morning temperatures range from 27 degrees in Steventown to 36 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 45 degrees. Air quality today will be good. And it is going to be windy this afternoon. We get a high of 58 at 3 p.m. The real story, though, happens after dark. Seriously, secure your yard or your garbage cans will end up in the next town. A bit of rain may fall after sunset. Could even see some snowflakes in the hills. But the wind is the main event. Gusts are forecasted to reach 60 miles per hour. Some people may wake up in a power outage. Make sure you charge everything. We see a low of 40 degrees. Then, tomorrow is looking still windy with a chilly high of 48. Overnight, temperatures make it down to 30 degrees. Then, Friday, cloudy with a windy afternoon and a high of 54 at 3 p.m. Rain falls overnight as temperatures dip to 47 degrees. Then, Saturday has light chances for rain in the morning with a high of 60. Sunset today will be at 4:32 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:29 a.m. Looking way up, we see the sun has woken back up. X-class flare chances are at 25%. Plasma winds will be slow at 366 kilometers per second with an average density of 5 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently good with an S3 level noise floor. There are low chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 91. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC helps you sleep at night and stay awake in the daytime. Whether at work or play, in good times and in bad, no matter the weather, community radio brings you local news, agricultural information, music and sounds, oratory, and radio stews.
90.7 FM, WGXC.
Where is far away?
This is Meredith Cooey, and I am here at MPAC with Natan Dykin
Furtado, and we are talking about the work that is being presented this upcoming Friday.
Yeah, I'm Natan Dyken Furtado. I'm a collaborative artist and designer and also a student in the Electronic Arts PhD program here at RPI. And this Friday, we're experimenting with an open source radio transmission and projection project that I've been developing called Community Portal, which uses water and bowls and radios and ghost boxes to allow you to sort of listen with your watershed and your more than human community around you, and also interact with that community now that you've sort of been able to get in contact with it.
The reason it took so long is that different points are different tolerances. So we're like, oh my god.
It's so good. It looks like woven.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to fit all that, everything inside.
I was worried about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Didn't, but we got it.
That we're here.
All right, we're taking a right.
I think the reality is the elevator doesn't go up to the level, so you have to take those elevators.
Oh. That's quite funny. Oh, is that in this one?
No.
Okay.
There's only, so this is a quirk of this building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's built for these, like, beautiful immersive performances, and so they built almost every single space as, like, Faraday cage so that radio can't get in, and so we're in the one room that's not like that.
Hmm.
Because it's a radio based piece. Okay. Yeah, it's far away from all that stuff.
Are these like recording
signals?
Or is it just
no, it just is. Yeah,
I like them.
Something like that vibe.
Oh, scissors, perfect. Okay, y'all do.
We'll do our
what
thing.
You need to do. I'm gonna unplug this.
So we're gonna make it like a over-the-shoulder purse.
Yeah, I love that.
Side length.
Yeah, you sure?
Like longer?
That's what we're thinking for the nature level. You can like carry it
over your shoulder.
Yeah, that seems right, doesn't it?
We're secure.
So this cord was.
Yes,
made.
So this artist, the artist who made this cordage, her name is Azaray Kahai, and she is an indigenous artist, Hawaiian indigenous artist, who lives in Troy, and she goes to corporate landscapes and harvests the yucca plants there, and then she processes them and hand braids this cordage.
She does basket weaving and stuff.
She has incredible basket weaving as well. She's done, a lot of really beautiful fiber and plant-based art.
And this one in particular is from, like, the CVS.
From
that's
the
on
CVS
the
in
River.
Lansingburg.
In Lansingburg. So
across the street from our house, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's right on the Hudson River.
Yeah,
so
that's great for
the
us.
Connection
the connection.
Yeah.
Really cool.
So
well, now
this
that kind of looks goofy.
Too
right?
much?
Yeah, no, we gotta go back.
I think we
short.
Gotta do a handle.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry.
I was worried about that. No, it's good to make executive decisions.
Yeah.
So what is this that you're holding, this green box with the cord?
I can answer that. So
This is the community portal. It's an open source transmission and projection device to sort of communicate with your ancestors. And it uses water as sort of a frequency and radio strength modulation medium. And so what you're, this green box is the base of a ground plane antenna, and you create the full version of that antenna by placing a bowl on top of it and filling it up with water. And then when you put your hand in it, you modulate the strength of the reception. So basically it's a fancy antenna, but it's also trying to look like it's kind of as far away from like a scientific lab device as possible. So mm-hmm. it was created in partnership with the Nature Lab at the Sanctuary for Independent Media, mm-hmm. and it was sort of play tested and dreamt up in partnership with the youth scientist fellows there, who mm-hmm. are high school age students. And they're trained and are used to using sort of very scientific, sort of like closed box, very sterile looking equipment to measure the plastic levels and the sort of different levels of bacteria and viruses in the water. Mm-hmm. But they really wanted a way to sort of feel more connected to the water that they were coming back kind of week in and week out and testing and stepping in. And so this was a way of kind of listening to the water and listening with the water, since the water was also in all of us because we're part of the Hudson River watershed by mm-hmm. living here. And so this device came out of that, and we wanted to keep the look kind of more ancestral and culturally like open and a lot less corporate than these big sort of white boxes where they're taught how to use them, but they're told that if you do something wrong, then it's an error and you can't use any of that data.
Right.
And so this is designed to be something that you kind of, it's an open-ended scientific instrument. You don't have a specific way to use it, and you're not going to get a bad result by playing with it.
And so there will not be that, like, pole, the antenna. This is
yes, this is the antenna. So yeah. Inside of this is, so a ground plane antenna has sort of, like, two parts, three parts. There's, like, a base that sits on a piece of metal. It's actually at the bottom here.
Mm-hmm.
And then it plugs into this top plate here.
Mm-hmm.
And the top plate is basically taking the place of what would be like a wired connection to the antenna.
Mm-hmm.
So it's allowing us to hot swap in bowls of water.
Mm.
So the initial version of this that we play tested at Nature Lab, you actually had to like unscrew and unscrew, and you had to modify bowls. And that worked fine if it's just me and like three fellows, but it doesn't work if you're handing this off as a technology for people to use.
Sure.
And so we developed this plate system so that people could use anything that they had at hand. That's another part of it, is it's all being released as sort of this open source technology and open source design files that anyone can build from.
Uh-huh.
And so saying like, hey, you have to modify these bowls in a very specific way kind of seemed like the opposite of letting people do things.
Totally.
So we revised the design so that you could, yeah, just use any bowl, essentially like a kitchen sink mixer bowl
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. can be used.
And so in front of me, I have, yeah, two kitchen bowls, this green, I love the shape of this, by the way. Yeah,
that
and
came
I wanna,
from Julian and Deirdre,
yeah, I want to talk about that. And then there's like this brass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like more of an oval shape. And I'm wondering, since this is different from this,
yeah,
if that has significance. In particular.
Yeah, I mean, I think it might. This is one of the things we're finding out, because we've never had a version of this that allowed for different bowls to be used. We don't know if different bowls sound different or if they do different things, so we're kind of
mm-hmm.
going to find that out in real time.
Mm-hmm.
The original bowl for this was actually a singing bowl, like a brass singing
mm-hmm.
bowl that got modified.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea there was, well, it sort of has a resonance and a vibration to it, so...
Mm-hmm.
It seems more adept at sort of picking up on resonances and vibrations.
Sure.
Maybe that's not as true about these mixing bowls, right? Because we might hear that, like...
Right.
Like, there's still something, but it's not, like, beautiful.
I wonder, too, about, like, the metallurgy.
Yeah. But, like, this, for example, is just... I just found this as another version that had, like, a really nice sound to it. And something that we did find out when we were playing with the youth science fellows is you could sort of get it to... sort of make more noise or to talk to you more if you sort of vibrated the bowl or tapped it. There was something about that that sort of raised the frequency level or the strength that it was capturing at. And so that's why this is here, is to play with that. It's also, you know, we're here at MPEC, which is like, so this is like a very not scientific, like almost, it's an installation kind of space. And so I was thinking of going with a bowl that's a little bit more visually appealing.
Sure.
Whereas in a situation like at a youth science lab, like at Nature Lab, like something like this is perfect because it's like ready to go. You don't have to worry about it.
Right. Easy to find.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of, kind of like towing the line here because on the one hand, it's an art object. On the other hand, it's actually like a tool that we want people to be able to use. And so we're kind of trying to allow it to be both.
Right, right. What you were saying about the, you know, if you play, you know, make resonance with this and how that impacts the frequency.
Yeah.
There's something interesting about the material meeting the water meeting radio.
Yeah. Yeah, so
like
the
transference of different kinds of waves.
Yeah, there's a beautiful. So the original idea for why you would even combine water with the radio and all that stuff was trying to look back at sort of in my own ancestral heritages and look into different sort of scientific tools. And one of the things that kept showing up in all of these different, whether it was African or whether it was Amerindian sort of Latin American indigenous populations or whether it was Sephardic Jewish populations, something that was coming up was sort of like water divination, and specifically water divination as this like sort of like multi-purpose scientific instrument before we had all these other scientific instruments. Mm-hmm. And so that's where it started from, was like, okay, well, can we sort of figure out a modern day way to sort of get information from water? And then stumbled across these designs for liquid antennas, which were sort of these things that were developed with the Navy in the 90s, where you could actually send and receive radio signals underwater, and you were using water as the medium for that. And so it sort of clued me into, oh, maybe we can still do that.
Mm.
And so that's kind of a closed source, it is closed source, but it's also kind of a closed box in the sense that those antennas are designed as these little sort of like chips that have liquid in them.
Mm.
And the idea with the bowl was, well, let's go back to this like very sort of ancestral, ritualistic, it's almost like an offering bowl.
Mm-hmm.
But by opening up and making the water the medium that you actually touch to interface with the antenna, you become a part of it, right? It's not this secondary thing. And so what you're saying about how the water material and the waves sort of tie into the vibration here is really interesting, because over the summer, one of the things that the youth sciences fellows got to do was like figure out, well, what are the different methodologies that we can use to make this work like reliably? And a lot of them had to do with that kind of interface between the how the vibrations meet the bowl and the water. So one of the youth science fellows, Tanasia, figured out that like, oh, if I rub my finger right at the line where the water meets the bowl and I do it in a specific speed, like every time I make a full turn, it actually says a word.
Hmm.
And that was really strange.
Yeah.
And we didn't understand what was going on there.
Right.
And we still don't understand what's going on there. And then Tanasia also figured out that, like, if you do little swirls at the bottom of the bowl, which is almost like vibrating it, because we were using a singing bowl, right?
Yeah.
That would also cause that to happen. But what was really weird was we were doing sort of a group meditation where we were asking people to sort of put their hands in the water, this being the Hudson River around us, while Hudson River water was in the bowl. And Tanasia was doing these little circles. And the meditation was, do any shapes come to your mind? And basically everybody drew a version of this spiral that Tanasia had figured out was a thing. Who knows what that means, right?
Hmm.
And then the third method that was developed was by Polly, another one of the youth science fellows, figured out that if you put rocks into the bowl, so you like sort of put more minerals into the bowl, it also starts to receive more, and it's a stronger antenna, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really interesting too, because it's like, well, is this rock receive more signal or does this rock? And then if you move the rocks around, it receives different things. And so that way we could even localize the use of the antenna even more to like the spot, which was really cool.
So do you consider the person that is interacting with this also part of the antenna?
Absolutely.
Like they become antenna?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a way to sort of, you know, listen with the full water system and the more than human sort of community in that water system and around us, and we're part of that just by being part of the water system, by having the water in us, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's the connection there. So you are actually absolutely the missing piece is the human element, and you'll actually see on this version of the antenna we have these sort of like graphic instructions here that show that you actually activate it by touching it, and that, you know, something else activates it by touching it from under the water, right? We don't know what that element is. And then that leads to sort of sound.
So for listeners, on this amazing, I don't know why, I'm just obsessed with this right now, on the should I just call it receiver?
Yeah, you can call it the, yeah, the...
Yeah, the antenna.
The liquid...
The liquid antenna.
Yes.
So on the sides of it, on the different faces, there are these markings. And how did y'all make this? You made these markings?
Yeah, so this is... Okay, you made the graphics. These graphics are part of, as I said, it's an open source technology. And so when the first version of this that used these sort of like handmade, sort of like glued together chips and stuff, the first version of this that had the instructions released to the internet, I wanted to be able to have a diagram where, like, even if the technology didn't make sense anymore, because it's, like, made with specific stuff that you can get now. Like, it's an Arduino chip that you can get now.
Right.
But the idea is, like, how do you create a technology that you could replicate, like, way later or way earlier in time?
Right.
And, like, what came to me was, like, a very simple visual diagram.
Right.
And so this was actually the visual diagram that was, like, oh, if you can't use any of this technology anymore, maybe you can make it up or reconnect to what we were trying to do.
Right.
With the drawing. And it just so happens... that what Deirdre and Julian did here is, like, actually figure out how to use that kind of initial diagram as kind of the instruction set and the graphics for this piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wraps to the bottom as well.
Yeah, those were the other ancestors that are waiting to...
But, and so this is made with, like, ASCII, or is it...
Yes,
like
so
text?
It's fully... So that's the other thing, is I sort of looked and saw, well, what's the thing that's lasted the longest in terms of transmitting information, and it's, like, just pure text, right? And so these drawings are actually made as pure text. They're not line files or anything. They're just ASCII art. It's just text.
If
it's like
look,
A's
it's like
and I's and V's.
These are A's and these are V's.
Oh, oh, wonderful.
There's slashes and
yeah.
Yeah, so there's this ear receiving, right? Is that what this is?
Yeah, so the ears are the speakers for this device.
Okay.
And then the hands are just showing you, once this bowl is here, that you would do this.
You put,
And that would be that you're sort of listening in to something else, to something more than human.
Yeah, and then on the bottom, what did you say, the ancestors?
On the bottom, it's just acknowledging that there's other things that we don't know yet. So it's more sort of ancestral hands that are waiting to talk to you.
Yeah.
And this is all 3D printed
with
two colors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one cohesive shape, I don't even know how to describe this, one cohesive form, which is beautifully made.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Okay, and so... I'm trying to figure out, since we, like, just jumped into
it. We can also turn it on.
Yeah, let's turn it on.
Let me put some water in here real quick.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, I'm anxious to see it
worked. Yeah.
I'll be right back.
Yeah. Okay, and so will y'all introduce yourselves?
Sure.
And talk about... your role in the project.
Sure. I'm Deirdre. This is Julian.
Hi.
Or do we need full names? Sorry. Okay. I'm Deirdre. This is Julian. We are Fun Stuff Design. It's an industrial design studio based here in Troy. And our collaborative role in this effort was to make this physical object that can be carry this liquid antenna anywhere you want to use it. So the scenario that Natan presented to us was taking it out onto the Hudson River and pulling the water from the Hudson River and then using it as an antenna on the water in a boat. And so we thought, okay, how can we make this thing portable? How can we take sort of this version one that he's already created and put it inside of a box that sort of conveys all of the information, and also because it's a very vibey project. It's not your classic consumer electronic object. So how can we convey that sort of vibe as well and make it accessible and make it really easy to use for anybody who doesn't even really know what's going on?
But we also came at this from industrial design lens, so we're like, well, it has to be waterproof, it has to be usable. And also kind of we thought of it as like a product in a way. Like we wanted to take that lens because it's, I don't know, it's something that we have appreciated in the past of like taking art objects and turning them into something that you could think of as almost like a product. Or taking that kind of like imbuing it with that feeling at least. Which kind of toes this line between, you know, consumerism and art for art.
One of the things that I was thinking about when I was reading that text that you sent me, what was it? Visionary engineering in the instrument.
Yeah.
Right? So I was thinking a lot about, like, scientific instruments, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. musical instruments, yeah. mm-hmm. and things like this, and where this fits into that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? That's a great question. Yeah. So, I mean, I have been thinking about it as an instrument, and that's on a couple different levels. One is exactly that it's a scientific instrument. It's also questioning, like, well, what gets to be a scientific instrument, mm-hmm. right? Like, there's the artist and the theorist Rashida Phillips talks a lot about how, like, you know, all of these big, like, the DNA sequencers that they use at Nature Lab and the sort of, like, parts per million counters that they use at Nature Lab get to count as scientific instruments, but the water divination that doesn't get to count because it's not part of this Western lineage, right? And so this was calling it specifically an instrument is a questioning of that. It's also a play on the fact that, so the other part of this device there's the ground plane antenna, but then there's also sort of like an old school spirit box, sort of like ghost hunting technology box in here.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes from a lineage of what's called instrumental transcommunication, which is like this idea that you can use the radio or other instruments of communication to talk to the beyond the veil, right? And so calling it an instrument is also playing with that. And when I'm thinking about it as a tool that lets you connect sort of with not just your ancestors, but other sort of human and more than human ancestors of the land and of the water, it becomes not so much an instrument of transcommunication, but it sort of becomes an instrument of transcultural communication. So it's like talking across many sort of ancestral traditions and cultures and trying to uncover what those are that we've sort of lost in our own past. You know, just like this instrument comes from sort of a lineage of things that were kind of obscured as being scientific, there's also all sorts of ancestors and peoples in our own backgrounds that get obscured as being part of our ancestral lineage. And so,
yeah, and so going back to this idea of product versus mm-hmm. art object, things like this, it's like, yeah. Well, is this a product mm-hmm. or it's an instrument that is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Like just like a guitar,
yeah.
just like a beaker,
yeah.
You know, in something like that.
Well, I think that's the huge,
like, not a commodity object, mm-hmm. but
yeah,
something
right.
different.
Exactly,
yeah.
That's the huge yeah. benefit that Julian and Deirdre brought to this, because it's by thinking about it as a product, it makes it accessible, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, previously, the version I've used, it's accessible once you have somebody explain it to you, and it's accessible
mm-hmm.
if somebody's, like, maneuvering it and plugging it in and then just telling you to interact with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not accessible if you want to get into it yourself.
Sure.
It's not at the version of, like, a beaker or a guitar. And so what you're
totally.
Saying is exactly right. Like, in some ways, you need to have this extra step where you don't feel afraid to engage with it. And by, you know, productizing it to a certain point, I think it really does that. And we sort of productized it to a kind of very weird point, which is great, which is kind of this alternative instrument zone.
Right. So it seems like there's multiple levels of engagement,
yeah.
right? It's like people that don't solder, that
yes.
don't do all the things,
yes.
right? This is here. And
yes.
for the people that do
yes.
those, you know, building their own instruments and electronics,
yeah.
it's open source for people to, like, mm-hmm. find that and do
that's
it
exactly
themselves.
Right. And,
yeah.
and each step of the way has been released and is getting released as sort of an open source thing. So, like, before we even knew how to do this sort of at this size, I figured out how to do it just on a laptop. So there's a version online that, like, if all you have is a laptop, then you can make it work, like, downloading some specific software and some custom code that
mm-hmm.
was written for it.
Yeah.
And then, okay, if you want to take it a step further and you want to take it out into the community like we did at Nature Lab, but you don't have, like, a 3D printer, then you can just do this and put it in any case
mm-hmm.
with just any, if you have access to this chip, right?
Right.
And then it's like, okay, if you want, like, Nature Lab, now that we've done it and we've shown that it's, like, really engaging and fun, if you want to have a permanent version in your space, you're, like, whether it's a cultural center, an art space, or even just, like, at your house, then you can build one of these, right? So
mm-hmm.
one of these more defined, sort of productized versions.
Right.
And it'll just keep going that way. But the point was to keep all of those different versions open.
Sure.
Because it allows engagement at whatever level you feel comfortable with.
Right.
But, yeah.
And so what I'm interested in talking about next is the sound.
Yes, why don't we get going?
Because underneath the table where we have the liquid antenna and the bowls and things, there is a mixer with pedals.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
So how does this all
So this is
fit
all
together?
Doing a bunch of different stuff. So let's plug it in and we'll show you. Or maybe I should tell you before I plug it in.
Sure.
So this is doing a couple things. So what we're doing is the sound that comes out of the antenna, the liquid antenna, because it's going really fast through the whole FM range.
Oh, because it's doing the scanning.
It's doing the scanning
thing.
Really fast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's can be described as harsh.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so, though it is listenable, one of the things, again, trying to think of like, well, how do you make it more accessible to people who are going to immediately be turned off by something like that harsh noise?
Yeah, not into
We're
it.
We're treating it by a series of effects pedals. So this
mm-hmm.
is this. So very simply, you know, we're using an EQ
mm-hmm.
to cut down some of the sort of like hissing and different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then using a tremolo because, again, this is sweeping really fast through
mm-hmm.
The range. We're trying to counteract that kind of sweeping noise by sweeping it a different direction with the tremolo
mm-hmm.
and then adding some delay just to fill it out. So
mm-hmm.
it's basically just turning something that's harsh into something that's moderately enjoyable
mm-hmm.
because that's going to run into these headphones that are here in the space. So I should add that, so there's kind of two parts to this show. One is the reveal of this beautiful new version of the antenna, but the
mm-hmm.
other is we're experimenting with this new way of using it, which is based on, again, as the whole thing is sort of this play on this instrumental transcommunication thing, there's been this big new way of using sort of spirit boxes and stuff that was developed pretty recently called the Estes method,
yes.
which is where one person listens on headphones to the sound from the radio and then responds to somebody asking a question
right.
in
yeah.
the room. And so we're kind of playing with that here. And so what we've done is we're actually running the sound from the antennas into these two headphones that are on either side of the room here. And they're next to microphones. So people can actually listen for somebody else as kind of like an act of care. So you're listening to somebody else's ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're speaking the words that you hear into the microphones.
Mm.
And that's also another set of filtration. So again, trying to make it a more calming and inviting and relaxing space is the headphones are sort of, they're filtered to a certain level, but then we have all this other stuff that's filtering the microphones so that we hear it.
Mm.
And so
mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to get this
yeah.
going. And we will. Okay.
And so is this water from
this
here?
This is just water from here.
Okay.
And so
yeah.
something that we've learned is that water that's been through the filtration system of the city usually leaches out a lot of the minerals we need to make it work.
Sure.
So this may very well not work right away.
Yeah.
But we'll at least get something.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe I plugged this in.
Put a rock in there.
Yes, definitely.
You got any rocks?
Who keeps
well,
pebbles
we can go
in
and
their
grab
pocket?
Something. So this goes here, the little plug-in right there. And then do I just flip this?
Flip
mm-hmm.
that, and then the potentiometers also have on-off.
Great. So.
And so... where is the sound?
So the sound is going to these speakers in the room, since we're sort of building up for an installation. They're in
oh,
the,
okay.
They're in the floor.
Okay.
And then
yeah.
what you'll hear is, if you put these headphones on, I'll do it.
Yeah.
You'll hear, here, I just hold them over you. You'll hear just the, you'll just hear the feed from the antenna. But if I put them on and I talk, what I hear?
Secret. Force. Transfer.
So that's kind of the vibe.
And so, thinking about the person, so Deirdre,
yes.
you're touching the water right now.
Yes.
So is it all of the... like ancestors and you that are part of this?
We don't
that
know.
Become
I mean, that's
the
a
antenna?
Question.
Could be.
Could be. I think the thing that's difficult because we're in the middle of setting it up right now is you kind of have to set the tone before it feels like it's really working. It's one of those interesting things where we're kind of working from fiction into reality because
mm-hmm.
it's sort of like, the way I like to think about this, it's sort of like relinking and recuperating those kind of connections. And
mm-hmm.
so part of that is you have to make that first initial leap where it's feels like it's almost fictional and made up
mm-hmm.
and then start to feel like, well, does that actually make sense? Does it actually feel like it connects to something?
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is like the lighting, which we don't have working right now, and like all these things that aren't here right now. But
mm-hmm.
on Friday, the way this space will be set up is it'll be this loungy space. There'll be
places to sit, like on beanbags. There'll be really beautiful lighting, and the sound will actually be mixed right.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's about that. It's about setting the tone and then having the sort of space and the time to feel like you're actually able to listen and want to make a connection,
mm-hmm.
and then have that connection actually resonate.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a little bit hard when I say three words to make it feel like it's actually doing something.
Yeah.
Well, Julian was in here first, and then I put my hands in with him as well, and then the sound changed.
Well,
and
so that is something that happens, right?
It's jokingly said, well, my ancestors are speaking louder. So...
I mean, it is, so some of it is just basic radio tech science,
course,
right? Which is
course.
Cool, which is like the more people that put their hands in it, the different it sounds and the
mm-hmm.
more strong it is. And so it's just like if you were all holding the TV antenna, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that, so then it's like, okay, we come from this basic principle of we all know that works, but then what can that actually mean? And that's where we kind of get into this sort of like open-ended
mm-hmm.
fictionalized space. And then something else that's really cool about this version is that if we turn the feed that's going out off and we turn this one on, this is the to be used anywhere outdoors speakers.
Coming from the speakers.
Oh, great. And is so this is battery powered now?
Yeah.
Great.
It's 1 9 volt battery, I think. Yeah.
Can I touch it?
Absolutely. Here, would you like the full experience? I'll switch over to the
sure.
other. That's really satisfying.
Got a good click. Is it sounding like
it? Sounds perfect. Yeah. So the other thing that's really fun too is, and it's something that happens with the Estes method and like other ways of using these instrumental transcommunication devices, is like what a person hears won't necessarily be what everybody else hears.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so what's fun is in the space you're actually hearing the raw feed, but then you're also going to hear what people are interpreting.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this weird gray zone of like, well, did you hear that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thinking about for the actual like installation day is as a ritual, because your hands come out wet, to sort of celebrate the fact that maybe you're getting in touch with a part of you that you haven't like spent a lot of time thinking about. You can like drop your water onto this I think this is like a Rose of Jericho or one of these resurrection plants, and like just start to sort of rewater that connection. And so you get sort of like a visual of that kind of connection that you might have just made. Instead of just wiping your hands on a paper towel.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm thinking about right now is, right, so you talk about how we're using water, the water from the river, that we're living within its watershed, and the waters in our water in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's radio
mm-hmm.
and the electromagnetic activity within our bodies, and like how we, our bodies, our antenna themselves
yeah. Yeah.
too.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you could talk about why radio? Like
yeah.
how did you come upon, why did you choose radio for this?
I think the most basic answer is because it was the medium that was being used by these sort of original, older, sort of paranormal technologies, right? So that was the first answer.
Mm-hmm.
But then now, since I've been playing with this, it's expanded, right? It's this sort of ethereal but physical medium. So it's exactly like what you're saying. Like, we don't know, we have no sense of it in our day-to-day lives until we turn on an assistive technology to be able to hear it, but yet it's right here. So, like,
mm-hmm.
some word is happening that I can't hear, like, right in this moment, right next to my face. And another
right.
word is happening right next to my chest. And,
right.
Maybe I have some intuition about that. I have no idea.
Right.
But we need these sort of assistive devices to be able to hear it. And once we do tap into that, then it's all of a sudden, it's like, much like, you know, these ancestors that maybe we're not as connected to, maybe those are around us in that same way. Mm-hmm. Right? And so it becomes not just sort of a metaphor, but actually kind of like a translation layer for that kind of thing, radio does. And then the other thing that fascinates me a lot about radio is that it's a public space that's all around us, but that we're kind of not necessarily encouraged to tap into. And it's also a public space that's been sort of corporatized. And in what's interesting is that this is using the FM spectrum, but originally Spirit Box has used the AM spectrum because it tended to have more talking, right? And it was more like a talk radio. But you actually can't do that anymore because new cars needed the AM spectrum to run something on their cars. And so there's very few stations actually on AM anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really interesting that here's a technology that was developed for AM that actually you can't even use it anymore because some other corporate like interests kind of destroyed that public communications space. And so that's why this is using FM. But then it also starts to ask the question, well, like, is this what happens when this goes away or will this go away? It's also interesting to sort of realize just how much sort of like advertisement and things are going around your body all at the same time, right? It kind of, you make a sense of that as well, because it's not just the ads that we see. And it's maybe hopefully taking some of the like words and information of those ads and piecing them together into something that's actually like liberatory and helpful, as opposed to something that's just trying to sell you something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about that a lot in terms of like public space is really interesting because as we've moved, as we've aged as a society, like public spaces have become privatized.
Mm-hmm.
But like the privatization of public space sometimes makes it a lot easier to sort of use tactically for other means. And so I'm thinking a lot about like someplace like Zuccotti Park. It wasn't a public park, it was actually a private park.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what allowed encampments to stay there for as long as they did, because it actually didn't have the same rules that public parks had. And so I'm thinking about the FM frequency as that too. It's like,
right.
It's actually a public space, but it's also a private space. And because of that, we're kind of able to tap into it a lot longer, and use it for our own purposes.
Yeah. It makes me think of when radio was privatized, and it's because there was too much out there and there was too much competition, like between like on the different frequencies.
On the frequencies,
And so have you looked at, I'm assuming you have, but the maps that are drawn, and it's not a map, but more that chart that identifies all the different bands.
Oh, yeah,
and
where
what
all the bands are. Yeah.
And like FM is like a teeny tiny little piece within the whole, you know, radio spectrum.
So that's something that's interesting about, so the version of this that uses a laptop uses a software-defined radio.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask about that.
So that allows
too.
You to use other things that aren't FM, right? And so that's
right.
something that I have not explored yet, but
yeah.
it's a possibility, which is like, yeah, you could use pretty much anything and bring it in, which would be really cool.
Yeah.
That's part of the open sourceness and the openness of this project is like for, it can be site-specific and also project-specific in the sense that, well, maybe somebody does want to do something with like ham radio or wants to do something on some other frequencies, and they can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just by downloading it and figuring it out how it works for them. Yeah.
Cool. So,
Thank you all so
Bye.
Much.
Bye.
Yeah, of course. It's
perfect.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, good to meet you.
Thank you. Oh, wait, leave them because I'll take them to Nature Lab.
Oh, great.
Okay, we're gonna
have to do some tweaking before.
Oh, well, then take
anyway,
them.
So we'll take them. Yeah.
Okay. Take the bowls.
Oh.
Yeah. We'll catch up later.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot. And then there's also, like, something we've been playing with, like, when I was talking about how our the scientist fellow Polly would put rocks in it.
Mm-hmm.
That made us think, like, well, are rocks the only thing that make a difference? Like, can other things? And so did a workshop at Penn a few weeks back where we had people bring objects that were important to them and put them in and see what happens. And it's like, well, again, it's about like connecting to this sort of fictional space and then does it feel like it has meaning or not? So it was really interesting because you'd put an object that was important to you in the thing and then all of a sudden it's like, are the words connected to that object in some way?
Mm.
It's kind of, it puts it into question. It makes it a really interesting open-ended exploratory device.
Mm-hmm.
But we're sort of learning as we go, which is the beautiful part of this. And what's great is that, yeah, everybody's sort of contributing and making it more exciting.
Right. And that, I mean, that is...
Huh?
kind of like the scientific method, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you say that, it does sound like that, right? Yeah.
Right? It's like, it's having an idea and then seeing what happens.
Yeah.
Like, when you do different variables.
Yeah, right? I mean, you brought it up earlier. I was thinking about this, and I think about this a lot, is this version of, like, visionary engineering. And what I mean by that is, visionary engineering is this combination of exploratory engineering and visionary fiction. So exploratory engineering is this idea that you can, in fact, sort of engineer things sort of for the future and sort of engineer things out of sort of fictions.
Mm-hmm.
And then visionary fiction is this idea that we can use fiction to sort of create a better future. And visionary engineering, the combo of the two, is this idea that we can sort of engineer things that sort of reconnect us and liberate sort of our pasts and our futures, right?
Mm-hmm.
By connecting those two things.
Right.
And so that's, in some ways, yeah, it is the scientific method, but it's the scientific method in this sort of like liberatory, reconnective way where everybody has sort of the same amount of say and nothing sounds crazy right off the bat.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And thinking about how oftentimes science fiction, right, becomes the reality.
Yeah.
And I think you touched on that a bit in that text,
too,
right? We see it unfolding right now.
Yeah.
With,
you
know, all the new technologies
yeah.
and all the ways that the technologies are being used, right, have been foreshadowed long ago through science fiction writing.
That's exactly right. And I mean, I think, so the other thing that's interesting about that is, like, what gets deemed science fiction, right? So as I was talking about before, about like sort of Rashida Phillips and like scientific instruments that aren't allowed to be sort of in the Western idea of science instruments, like a lot of the things that we think about in science fiction actually do connect to things that were like sort of spiritual technologies and ancestral technologies that just didn't get allowed, right? So when we think about colonization, a lot of the times the way colonization works is it takes the things that aren't beneficial to the Western concept or the colonial concept, and it makes them otherized, right? It makes them spiritual. It makes them not physical. It makes them immaterial. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, like, science fiction might not actually be science fiction. It might be something that was just relegated to that role because it didn't pose a benefit to a certain, like, lineage of society, right? And so that's the other thing about this idea of visionary engineering is, like, sort of recuperating some of those things and saying, like, well, that actually is a real scientific thing. And, like, if we treat it that way, what do we find out that's also actually real?
Right.
And a big part of that, and a big part of all of what we've been talking about, too, but we haven't said it exactly, is intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a big part of it is, like, the initial relinking device for all this stuff is just feeling like, hey, maybe there actually is something else. And that's kind of, so intuition is really the thing that knits all of this stuff together.
Yeah, and I, so thinking about prayer, for example, and how it's seen as not scientific, right? But, you know, with faith, prayer has results. Right? The technology of prayer, the technology of intention. And things like that, and taking intuition seriously, because when we also thinking about Western science, for example, a lot of the what we tend to see as important discoveries come from those very things. Happenstance, but the intention of seeking or whatever, or just like having a feeling of like, oh, maybe try this. And so
there's a great quote, and I might get this total, I'm not gonna get the quote wrong, but I believe it's Rabbi Menachem Cohen, who's a really interesting rabbi who thinks a lot about sort of like gaming and play as a way to actually make sort of like spiritual occurrences sort of happen, or to be able to sort of like guide spirituality. And they have a quote that says, I pray as if my prayer works. And that's kind of what you're hinting at, right? And how this whole thing works is it's kind of like we're making meaning by just sort of intuitively feeling as if that meaning is going to make sense.
Right. And not throwing that
out. And not throwing it
out. Taking that seriously.
Yeah.
Like, why don't we take that seriously?
Yeah. And in some ways, the radio and radio itself is a great part of that, because radio is this invisible thing that we actually take seriously. And so, like, even if just a metaphor, like, the fact that there's this invisible thing that when I turn this antenna on, I hear, kind of is a really strong metaphor to be like, well, if that's true, maybe I can for a second believe that these other things
mm-hmm.
are happening. If for a second I can believe that these other things are happening, maybe I can feel the positive effect
mm-hmm.
of that belief.
Right. It also makes me think of, in this one spiritual text, it talks about how, how dependence on power greater than ourselves actually frees us.
Yeah.
And it uses the example of electricity.
Oh, that's
right?
interesting.
Of like, when we go to flip on a light switch, we trust that that light will turn on.
Whoa.
Even though
yeah.
we may not know how it
mm-hmm.
functions. Right? And
yeah.
electricity in itself makes all these other things possible.
Yeah.
Right? And it's,
yeah.
you know, light, electromagnetic spectrum,
yeah.
things like that. And
yeah.
so I think about that a lot,
actually, yeah. mm-hmm.
too.
Well, it's the electricity is sort of this great presence, right, all
right.
around us
yeah.
that we
yeah.
sort of choose when to engage with and
right.
when to not engage
right.
with. And
yeah.
even when we choose not to, it's still flowing
it's still
through
there.
Us and
right.
it's still there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. What I want to ask now, though, too,
yes, please.
Is so this event.
Yeah.
So you have open studio hours.
That's
when
right.
are the open studio hours?
So the open studio hours are this Friday, which is
November
the 7th,
mm-hmm.
From 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at MPAC, the Experimental Music and Performing Arts Center at RPI here in Troy, New York. And basically, during those open hours, you'll be able to come in and experiment with this device and also this sort of ritual setup that we've set up, which is the listening for other people and then also being able to ask questions of your own ancestors and see if you sort of hear responses back through the mouths of strangers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it'll be an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I think, a little different than the kind of sort of art installation that people might be used to, where you kind of come in and you don't necessarily engage with it. You just kind of sit around. And so this will be a chance to like get to actually come to a space where not a lot of stuff is interactive or collaborative, and you get to sort of totally get into it and collaborate and interact with it and make it your own.
Mm-hmm. And partake in some sort of collective experience,
exactly.
too.
Yeah, yeah. So the room, as I said, will be set for this sort of collective experience, so that by chance, whoever is in here at a time will be, because there are, you need to have a person who's asking questions or connecting with the bowl, and you also have to have somebody who's listening and able to respond it.
Mm-hmm.
It, by necessity, involves a collaboration. So
mm-hmm.
you might be coming in and collaborating with people you've never seen or
mm-hmm.
and don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you can also bring a friend and do it that way, too.
Right,
that's
right.
you know, the fun thing about it.
Right, right. And did you say what time it is?
It's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
The world's most inconvenient hours.
In which studio?
So this is Studio Beta at MPAC.
Right. And as you said on the elevator, that it's the only one.
That's right. We're at Studio Beta because this entire building is built to withstand radio frequencies interfering with people's art.
Yeah.
And so when you have an art installation that requires radio frequencies, we have to get as close to the windows of this building as
mm-hmm.
possible. So
mm-hmm.
that is why we were as far away from all the other studio spaces
yeah,
as possible.
Yeah, that's interesting. Dealing with the architecture.
Exactly. Well, that's what
yeah.
that's what's interesting about it, right? Just by picking radio as a medium, it becomes site specific no
mm-hmm.
matter what.
Right.
And
right.
so like when we use it out at like Deer Creek, like way above the Hudson that feeds into the Hudson, it sounds a specific way because the valley is built a
right.
specific way and these rocks are resonating in a specific way. And then when we bring it down to like Studio One here at MPAC, it doesn't work because it's
mm-hmm.
built a specific way.
Right, right.
So yeah, it is in that way. It's always a collaborator, just like we are a collaborator with
right,
it. It's always
right.
going to sort of make a decision on how
right.
it works.
And depending on what other tech is in the room,
yes,
how
yes.
many bodies are in the room,
yes,
their devices.
That's something that
yeah.
I'm really excited to play with moving forward. As I've started reading up a little bit more about other sort of antenna designs, and there's this whole sort of theory about how like parasitic parts of antennas, so like people put sort of like metal bits in antennas that aren't actually wired in because they think that they work in certain sort of almost mystical ways.
Huh.
And so it's like in some ways exactly what you're saying, like more bodies in this room almost do that. They actually, even if you're not touching the bowl, they manipulate
right.
something about how the antenna is
right.
working.
Right.
And so trying to make that more of a cohesive part of a project like this is something that's really exciting
right.
to me.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. I use radio in my performances
yeah.
and when I sound check. Oh, it's, yeah. It's completely different than when people are in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's always frustrating and exciting.
Yeah.
Because there might be a sound that I really like.
Yeah.
And then I can't recreate it.
Oh, I know that oh too well.
Yeah,
That's another thing about this is, like, it's, we haven't quite figured out, like, the, there's, again, it's because of, there's never a number of people where you can guarantee
mm-hmm.
it's going to work. Like, sometimes it's like, I think, like, oh, it only works with small groups.
Right.
And then you'll have a huge group, and you're like, well, that was totally wild.
Right.
But then, so it's just like, yeah, it's exactly what you're saying. Like, it's a complete new experience every
right.
time. But there are methods that you can sort of carry forward
right.
that you learn.
And how, and it's, you know, thinking about those moments when it's not working
yeah.
exactly is
yeah.
not moments of failure.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's just a moment of negotiating the relationship with
yeah.
the device differently.
Yeah. That's, oh boy, that's
like
really
thinking
beautiful.
About
yeah.
them as like little, I like to think of radios in particular as, you know, little beings that
yeah.
like are talking
mm.
to each other,
yeah.
and like talking to me and
yeah.
talking to the environment. They have their own sort of world.
I love that.
You know, because radios fall in and out and they drift
yeah.
around and whatever, depending
yeah.
on the radio. And
well, I'm thinking
and
about,
like
you're reminding me of like sort of like the proto history of radio before it was like commercial stations, was just people sort of searching for each other.
Yeah, totally.
On these airwaves. And so
totally.
Like if we think about, you know, when you imbue sort of the tech with that kind of thing for so long, in some ways they might also have that desire to sort of reach
yeah.
out and
yeah.
and want to do that, which is really exciting.
There's this artist, Anna Frizz, mm. And she's currently at UC Santa Cruz, longtime radio artist and theorist. And one of her works from a long time ago was about the people in your radio.
Mm.
And so this, like, I think she
yeah.
had this idea growing up that you would turn on the radio and it's like there's little people in
yeah.
there, right? Oh. And they're like talking to you.
Oh, I love that.
And
that's
in
getting
a way,
me excited.
Yeah.
yeah,
and in a way, it's like kind of true.
Yeah. Well, it makes me think, like, if there's, that work is about people in your radio, in some ways this is about the other people that are in your body.
Yeah, yeah.
And using
yeah.
the radio as a way of even beginning to sense
right.
that.
Right.
Which
yeah.
is exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
That's really fun. Yeah, this is great. This print came out beautiful.
It did. It's
so yeah,
nice.
That's thank you so much. This
yeah.
is
okay, so let's do that was like a close, right?
I think so.
Okay.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM WGXC. Grabbable, handleable, listener-fueled radio for Greene and Columbia counties.